Monster Man, episode 341, Phantom Comma Lesser, and Fororakos.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at two more monsters from the handily named Monsters section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. And like with a lot of monsters in the Monsters section, we're going to be asking the question, what is this monster doing in this section? For at least one of them. One monster where we're not going to be asking that question is the first one, the Phantom, Lesser. Now you might think to yourself, James, how could it be that the Phantom, Lesser belongs in the Monsters section when it clearly belongs in the Undead section? Well, that would be true if the Phantom, Lesser were undead, but it's not. It's more like an illusion. It's a phantasm rather than a phantom, I suppose, and they are really the same word, which feels like splitting hairs, really. It is a misty-looking monster that actually really is just a sort of mist. And what it does is it tries to lure you into dangerous terrain, right? So it appears, and then when you attack it, it runs away, hoping that you're going to chase it and fall into a pit or some quicksand or whatever. Not sure why, but there you go. Apparently these first appear in X2 Castle Amber, which is very much in keeping with the idea of this kind of weird magical mansion, which is where that scenario is set. Because it's the home of a bunch of weird wizards, and it's not a haunted house per se, but it has a lot of the kind of structural features of a haunted house. I guess it's a real funhouse dungeon. So these kinds of like tricks and illusions are very much in keeping with what the scenario is like. Now, while I was researching the Phantom, Lesser, someone else very kindly had gone to this trouble before me and had discovered that, like, if you think of the Phantom, Lesser, what it does, the monster that it seems to be comparable to would be the Will-o'-the-Wisp, right? It's a bit like a Will-o'-the-Wisp. It appears to mislead travelers and get them going to the wrong place. Great. Except, wouldn't the Will-o'-the-Wisp already do that? And the answer is, there is no Will-o'-the-Wisp in Beckmi. Fair enough, lots of monsters that appear in the AD&D Monster Manual, or even that appear in BX or earlier editions of D&D, don't turn up in Beckmi, presumably for space reasons. But what's funny is that there are references to the Will-o'-the-Wisp in Beckmi. There's even a page number given for the Will-o'-the-Wisp, and it's in the table of contents for the monster section, which just ends at Whale and doesn't include a Will-o'-the-Wisp. I guess this is a monster that, you know, fulfills the same role. It appears in places and tries to lure travelers off of safe paths. So, just kind of a curious sidebar. I don't really have very much to say about the Phantom, Lesser because it's fine. It's not really a lesser version of the Phantom. It's just another monster that could conceivably have the same name. In that respect, it's a bit like the Banshee, Lesser, which is not really at all the same as the Banshee, of which it is presumably the lesser version. They're not even the same category of monster. They're just, in the case of the Banshee, Lesser, they're just an awkward attempt to reconcile two monsters with the same name. So on a kind of like taxonomic level, this monster sort of reveals some of the challenges of doing a book like this one. And the suggestion that I read about why there's no Will-o'-the-Wisp, I think is very telling. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But that is just that, like, because it was already in, it's in Greyhawk. And so it's in one of the very earliest D&D books. And so everyone just remembered it and kind of assumed that it was in BX or it was in Beckmi, even though it's not. And I don't know if that's true, but I would like to believe it. And I would like to believe it because I would like to believe that other people find the different editions of early Dungeons & Dragons as hard to tell apart as I do. Like, if you show me the book, I can tell you which edition it is most of the time. But if you want to ask me about what content is in one edition and what content's in another, or how the rules differ, I mean, I'm far from an expert in the rules of the version that I play, so much less any of the other ones. I just wouldn't know. And I suspect that a lot of people just blundered on using books from different editions, using scenarios from different editions, and, you know, just kind of bumping over the differences when they ran into them. Next up, we have the Fororakos. Now, the Fororakos is one of those creatures that, again, like the Green Jerai, what is it doing in the monster section? Why is it not in the animal section? I don't know. Because this is an animal that existed in real life. I mean, it's not even something that's like a fantastical creature that is effectively an animal, which we have seen a couple of these in the monster section, but it is a genuine real-world animal from prehistory. Well, it's a slightly different name. They call it the Phororhacos. In real life, it's called the Phorusrhacos, and it is a large predatory bird. Specifically, there's one kind of the Phorusrhacos longissimus. Is the one that I'm going to be talking about. They lived about 20 to 13 million years ago, and they are giant predatory birds. They're what are known by paleontologists as terror birds, which is a pretty fantastic name. I mean, they were pretty big. They stood about 8 feet tall. That's about 2.4 meters for my metric listeners. And they weighed maybe less than you'd expect, probably about as much as like an adult ostrich, which I guess is still pretty heavy. I mean, it's more than a person. And they had big clawed feet, and in particular, they had these huge beaks. Now, the name also given to the Phororhacos in the creature catalog is the sword beak, and it has been drawn with a very long, thin, pointed beak, almost as if the artist did not know that they were drawing a real animal, but was just going on the name and the description. So someone said it's like a large flightless bird called the sword beak, and the artist went, Roger, sword beak, beak looks like a sword, got it. Whereas in fact, the Phorusrhacos has kind of more like a kind of parody beak, like a real big, relatively short beak that still looks like it would snip your head off. Like, it is a very intimidating looking animal. This is a rare instance of my not pushing back against a popular saying. People who love birds will tell you that it's very cool that birds are effectively dinosaurs. You know, the people ask, how did the dinosaurs become extinct? And they didn't. They're still around us today in the shape of all the chickens and pigeons and budgies and what have you. And that's true in a way, but it's also not true in a way. Because speaking purely from the perspective of like the inner 8-year-old, the reason little kids like dinosaurs is not because of like the skeletal structure of their hips. It's because they're awesome. Is because they're huge, and they have big teeth, and they're scary. Or even the ones that don't have big teeth. You know, and partly because they're not around anymore. But none of those things are true of birds. You know, birds kept all the uninteresting stuff about dinosaurs and got rid of all the cool stuff where they're huge and terrifying. So that is my Philistine view, right? I realize that if you are interested at all in biology, if you're interested in how species change over time, if you're interested in all kinds of things, like basically if you are a smart, good person, then the birds are actually dinosaurs thing is interesting to you. And if you are a brutish ignoramus like me, it's a little bit like someone trying to tell you that because, you know, all food, all edible things are basically made up of the same core elements, you know, carbon and nitrogen and whatever, that a salad is the same as a cookie. And while it's true that they're similar in some ways, they are distinctly different in other ways. But that's me, you know, from the perspective of kind of a meat-headed 8-year-old. That's the dinosaur thing. But these guys are basically dinosaur birds, and they're terrific. They're slightly ridiculous and highly terrifying, and that is an excellent combination. And, you know, they'll do well in any kind of, like, Lost World type of setting, or even just kind of roaming around. You know, there's no reason that big, flightless, aggressive birds couldn't be just wandering around the landscape. These are just a bit bigger and more dangerous than, you know, real species of big birds that exist in our world, right? They're, like I said, they're about the same mass as an ostrich. So, you know, I think it would be fun to kind of put the fantasy marker on a setting by having it have this real, non-fantastical, but extinct animal as part of its landscape. Be like in Usagi Yojimbo, where, you know, since all the humans are animals, all the kind of landscape animals are dinosaurs, so that there's a distinction between humans and animals. I wonder, you know, if the visual similarity of most fantasy worlds to our world, in terms of like the available species, in terms of the landscapes, just comes from being inspired by movies, which obviously have to be shot in the real world. You know, you're not gonna have a bunch of herbivore dinosaurs in the background substituting for cows when you could just have cows, presumably for budgetary reasons. Never occurred to me. But anyway, most fantasy settings don't show that much in terms of their like physical, non-magical differences from our Earth, but there's no reason for that. See also why don't fantasy heroes drink tea. Okay. Well, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. The rest of this week, we're going to have a couple of special episodes. So I've got one coming up on friendly monsters, and that's going to be followed by a Dealer's Choice special about hobgoblins. Also, we've got a new episode of Patron Deities coming out this week, and if you are a $2 or higher patron subscriber, go ahead and check the Patreon posts, because the poll for determining the topic of the next season of Patron Deities is up there. So we've got a lot coming up this week, and I hope that you're going to join me for it right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.